Let me acknowledge my collaborators, Lauren Pfeiffer and Ken West at Bell Labs. Just to quickly outline, just go into a few background points about composite fermion Fermi surface formation, some of the early experimental motivation for the theory, and then our experiments that help support the theory. But what I really want to do is focus on some more recent experiments where we've been using surface acoustic waves to probe density variations in these composite fermion systems. The experiments on the density modulated systems, first of all, using surface acoustic waves, we see, just to summarize the results, we see a loss of the composite fermion Fermi surface effect at 1/2, an appearance of something that looks like a quantum Hall effect instead in a simple grading. I'll look at the discuss the properties of this new effect, and then I want to go back over some DC transport results by another group, and then also some more recent things that I've been doing. Finally, in terms of explanations, we cover all bases by saying it's either extrinsic or intrinsic. Extrinsic, we'll discuss a Boltzmann equation approach for composite fermions, and intrinsic, just have you consider the possibility that there's a funny state at 1/2 in these modulated systems. Just to remind you of the length scales. Length scales in these systems are quite small, 400 angstroms for the electron separation for the typical densities we'll be using. What I want to show you is that the techniques that we'll be trying, the surface acoustic waves and the periodic modulations, are all in the length scales of just several thousand angstroms. So we won't come anywhere near these important, say, the electron separation, and yet we'll be able to pull out some interesting information about the 2D system. The first thing I want to discuss is just how do we do surface acoustic wave measurements on the 2D electron gas. We put a transducer that I've shown down here. It's a lithographically defined aluminum interdigitated transducer on one end of the sample. We shoot ultrasound through the sample and pick up the ultrasound on the other end of the sample and look at the changes in the ultrasound parameters. The transducers we put down have a fixed wavelength, lambda, and so we just excite that transducer set with a frequency such that the frequency times the wavelength is the sound velocity. Then we'll get a traveling wave through the system. So the saw traveling on gallium arsenide, this works because gallium arsenide is piezoelectric, applies a local electric field to the 2D electron system along the direction of propagation. That's important to keep in mind for the experiments I'll be showing you. The length scale of the electric field is just the wavelength of the surface acoustic wave. Now, the 2D electron system will respond ohmically to this applied electric field, and it will induce changes in the sound velocity and the transmitted amplitude. According to the transmitted amplitude will change in this simple relationship. You can see the dependence on the sheet conductivity, sigma xx. Now, what happens in the experiments, we see the lower trace is just the DC transport. Solid lines up above are transmitted amplitude and sound velocity shift. And you can see that whenever you have a feature down here in the DC transport, you can see that quite clearly in the ultrasound measurements. The dashed lines correspond to just using that simple relationship or the simple relaxation model that I showed you before. Now, the interesting thing is when we start looking at small length scales, that is, wavelengths on the order of or less than a few microns, and you can see at 1/2 you'd expect to see a broad maximum occurring, and instead we see this distinct minimum forming at 1/2. I'm trying to race through the introduction here to get to the meat of the experiment. As we go to higher frequencies, that is, to smaller wavelengths, you can see that this effect at 1/2 becomes more pronounced, a stronger minimum, if you will, in transmitted amplitude, and this corresponds to enhanced conductivity. If you don't like thinking about these things in terms of the ultrasound parameters, just flip it over, and it kind of looks like a transport measurement, except here we're seeing peaks occurring at 1/2 filling factor. And in fact, the effect is quite robust. It persists to very high temperatures. As you can see here, up to 3 Kelvin, you see this broad minimum still occurring at 1/2. So how can one explain that? Well, the explanation for that came along with the hypothesis of Fermi surface formation at 1/2 by Hopper and Lee and Reed in 93, or published in 93. And the bottom line here is that basically one can construct a quasi-particle that's sitting essentially in a zero effective magnetic field at 1/2 filling factor, and the system forms a filled Fermi C at 1/2. The important thing for the experimentalist is it seems to exercise semi-classical motion at 1/2 in response to this mean field. That is, the effective magnetic field is the magnetic field away from that you're sitting at away from 1/2 filling factor. The Fermi wave vector is increased over that of the electron system by a factor of square root of 2, and then you expect to see cyclotron radius that's again proportional to this Kf divided by the effective magnetic field. Let me just quickly show you how these SAW measurements are a consequence, or the effect at 1/2 is a consequence of this Fermi surface. Again, at 1/2, you see a stronger effect occurring as you go to higher frequencies at a smaller wavelengths. And in fact, if you plot out a conductivity for the system, again, using the relaxation model that I showed you, you'll see as a function of wave vector, this measured conductivity, it's wave vector independent and then increases linearly. And it's easy to understand that you have two different regimes in the system. In this lower regime where it's wave vector independent conductivity, the mean free path is smaller than the surface acoustic wave wavelength. And then as you go up in wave vector to go to smaller wavelengths, then the wavelength becomes smaller than the mean free path of the quasiparticle, and you get ballistic transport of the quasiparticle across this SAW electric field. Now, this view graph is particularly important to keep in mind when we start talking about the periodic modulations in the system. In this case, we're just focusing in on this effect at 1/2, and I want to try to explain why is it this effect becomes wider. Right at 1/2 filling factor, you have a zero effective magnetic field, and you have transport of the quasiparticle across the surface acoustic wave wavelength. As you move away from 1/2, this quasiparticle moves in a cyclotron orbit, and you can see that it's going to be able to short the SAW electric field less and less. And in fact, if you go far enough away from 1/2, the quasiparticle will, in essence, move orthogonally to the direction of the surface acoustic wave, and therefore you won't get the enhanced conductivity. And it's easy to see then that as you go to smaller and smaller wavelengths, you'd expect to go to larger and larger magnetic fields in order to get the same amount of shorting. And that tells you that you should have a linear increase in the width as a function of wave vector. And we see that. Now, the one thing that we're lacking in that point is that you're very close to measuring the Fermi wave vector of the system, but what you'd really like to do is get a precise measurement of that. And you can get a precise measurement of the Fermi wave vector if you have a geometric resonance of the cyclotron orbit of the quasiparticle with the surface acoustic wave wavelength. And we were able to see that by going to smaller wavelengths. You can see in this case, going to higher frequencies, smaller wavelengths, we eventually do see this resonance behavior occurring. And the position of this resonance in effective magnetic field then gives you a measure of the Fermi wave vector of the system, because we know the cyclotron radius is in twice the cyclotron radius is roughly in resonance with the wavelength. And in fact, these resonances can become quite large here. Keep these sorts of things in mind, the resonance structures in mind, because later on we'll be coming back to at least two different sets of geometric resonances. So you can measure the composite Fermi on mean free path by using surface acoustic waves. You can measure the Fermi wave vector. The problem here is that so far we've just looked at homogeneous 2D systems, homogeneous density 2D systems. What we'd really like to do is test the fundamental point of the theory, and that is what happens when you have these particles in a local density perturbation. Remember that you have flux, this gauge field flux that's presumably attached to the quasiparticle. What happens when you locally change the density of the system? And how do the particles respond to that? So just two examples of why this is an interesting system, regardless of any other factors that I've shown you so far. Let's first look at the edge of the 2D system. If we're sitting at a standard density, 1/10 to the 11, 1/2 filling factor, you move toward the edge of the sample, you eventually deplete the system, so you go from full density to zero density, and you can do that easily over a scale of around 1 micron. Well, in this mean field sense, that would tell you you're going from zero effective magnetic field to 8 tesla over a dimension that's on the order of the mean free path of this quasiparticle. So that must be quite an odd thing that you have this large of a spatially gradient field. Now, what we're going to be studying to look at this specifically is a periodically modulated density in the 2D system. That is about a 10% change in the density. It's easy to do that in these systems over a length scale of, say, a micron to half a micron. And you can see there that you'd be sitting in, for the typical parameters of our system at 1/2, a modulation of around 1 tesla in effective magnetic field. So that in and of itself is an interesting system to study. Now, periodic modulations have been used before to look at electrons. And in fact, when you use a metal grating or periodic illumination on a system, you'll see these things that have been called Weiss oscillations. And that is just oscillations that represent a commensurability of the electron orbits, the cyclotron orbits, with this grating. Now, the problem with those experiments is that it's quite a substantial perturbation on the density of the system when you either put a top gate directly on the heterostructure or etch the system or illuminate. And we know that we need to be fairly delicate with these systems. So what we did experimentally was just to basically construct an offset away from the surface of the 2D system using silicon nitride. And this seems to give us a more consistent surface doping, given the fact that we're then depositing a metal gate on the system. This allows us to tune from a zero density change. If you were to just put the metal gate on the heterostructure, you would, at zero gate bias, still end up with a modulation. So that's the technical point. The other factor in that to remember is that you are offset from the 2D gas by a relatively substantial distance. You're typically, if we're working at a half micron wavelength, we're typically, say, 2,000 to 3,000 angstroms from the 2D gas itself. So you do have some diminishing of the applied modulation at the 2D gas just because you're removed from it. Now the setup, well, there are four different possibilities for how you can do a measurement here if you're looking at DC transport and surface acoustic waves. You could do transport where you're running current and picking a voltage along the lines of the gate, or you could run the current orthogonal to the gates. The surface acoustic wave measurement, again, you could shoot the surface acoustic waves orthogonal to the gate lines or along the gate lines. In all the measurements I'll show you, we're typically dealing with about a half millimeter square area where we're exposing the system to the surface acoustic wave. And the gate wavelengths are going to be quite small. It's actually about 0.3 microns, and then up to large gate wavelengths and a very large range in surface acoustic wave frequencies and wavelengths as well to easily cover that gate range. DC transport, let me just go on from here. I won't even talk about that other than to say when we use a top gate, a metal top gate, we essentially don't get any sort of consistent or conclusive result. I'll come back to DC transport in a minute when I talk about using etches to induce the modulation. Now, how about the surface acoustic wave measurements? The first thing to do in something like this is just what happens when you use a solid gate on the system. Let's consider the possibility of screening of the 2D gas by a surface top gate. It turns out that over the magnetic field spectrum, you don't really see a substantial change in that spectrum if you have a solid top gate. So that's a good control. What about the configuration A, where we shoot a surface acoustic wave orthogonal to the gate lines? Same thing. We don't see a substantial change in the magnetic field spectrum of the 2D system with this gate configuration. And that's true for the surface acoustic wave wavelength, both larger and smaller than the gate wavelength. So far we have just negative results in record time. Now this is the key result, or the main result I want to emphasize for the rest of the talk and try to explain. This is in configuration B, that is where we're shooting the surface acoustic wave along the gate lines. The gate wavelength here is 1.3 microns at fairly low temperatures, 300 millikelvin. Start at the bottom trace. This is with a low bias. Again, a metal top gate, a low positive bias. So what we'll be doing here is increasing the gate voltage and moving to higher densities in the system. But in this bottom trace, it's just starting at filling factor 1 to 1/3. You see the typical peaks there. And at 1/2, you see this enhanced conductivity, that is the dip occurring. Now we start moving up in bias. Go to larger and larger biases, and you can see that the features at filling factor 1 and 1/3 stay pretty much the same throughout this range, but we make a conversion from this minimum to a maximum, a distinct maximum occurring right at 1/2 filling factor. And the first thing you'd say when you look at that is it looks like the same sort of effect you see at the quantum Hall states, at filling factor 1/3 and at 1. Now we see this peak forming. It's basically, I see it in every sample that I look at, if we have a sufficiently small gate wavelength. So we can test this over a range of gate wavelengths, and we see this occurring, have the onset, if you will, for gate wavelengths that are less than 2 microns. So this seems to be a critical dimension in the system, and of course it corresponds to the composite fermion mean free path. There aren't any other length scales in the 2D gas near this. Now once we induce the peak, it seems to be relatively insensitive. What do I mean by that? We can probe it with different surface acoustic wave wavelengths, or frequencies in this case, around 10 microns down to 2 microns. And you can see here that there's really not much of a change in this peak. This is using the same modulation period, of course. There's not much of a change in the peak size, that is the peak width here. And recall when we were using the surface acoustic waves to probe the composite fermion system, when we were looking at the width of the enhanced conductivity, that would change substantially with a change in SAW wavelength. This doesn't. And in fact, it's very similar to what we see at filling factor 1 and at 1/3. These features at 1 and 1/3 are also insensitive to the probing surface acoustic wavelength. The other thing, and this is quite important, is that when we change the gate wavelength, we don't see a change in the effect at 1/2 either, which is quite odd. We're not changing anything at filling factor 1, but there's no change in the width. And that's a little bit peculiar because when you think about the geometric resonance measurements on the electron system, you change the gate wavelength, you change the period of these vice oscillations. So it's oddly insensitive to the gate wavelength. It seems once you induce the effect, if you can go to a gate wavelength less than 2 microns, you can induce the effect. Another peculiar aspect of this finding is that it is very robust in temperature dependence, as you'd expect for a Fermi surface effect. That is, you can see this peak persisting to 1.5 Kelvin. But if you look at the functional temperature dependence, and this is just to try to get an empirical comparison between the quantum Hall states and what we see at 1/2, you see that it's roughly similar. These are all taken from the SAW measurements, just the magnitude of the effect at 1/2. So here's another thing. This feature seems to be oddly similar to a quantum Hall state. Well, now let's go to the transport measurements. I told you before, we didn't see anything at all in the metal top gates that we applied. Nothing substantial at 1/2 as we systematically changed gate wavelength and whatnot. However, Jürgen Smet looked at some high-density samples, much higher-density samples than what we were dealing with, and these are also light-activated. So they would basically lay down an etch in the system, a grid, if you will, perform transport across the grid, after having light activated the system, and they see these results. There's a reference. As you go to smaller and smaller gate wavelengths, you see a more pronounced relative effect occurring at 1/2. You see an enhanced minimum occurring at 1/2 filling factor. So to summarize the results, for the surface acoustic waves, for a small gate wavelength, less than 2 microns, and only for SAW propagation along the lines of the gate, I didn't emphasize this before, it's a very small density perturbation. It's on the order of about 5%. Such a small density perturbation can cause, first of all, the loss of enhanced conductivity at 1/2 and the appearance of this peak that looks like a quantum Hall state. The peak's independent of the SAW wavelength and independent of the gate wavelength as long as you're down below this critical 2-micron dimension. And the odd part is it seems to be very similar in temperature dependence to the quantum Hall effect. The overall effect is similar to the quantum Hall effect. And then DC transport, again, an enhanced minimum at 1/2 just for a small enough period. If you go to a large period etch lines, you don't see this. And again, this is transport orthogonal to the line, so it's a similar physical situation to the surface acoustic wave measurement. And the surface acoustic wave measurements, as we're applying a voltage along the lines of the gate, you're inducing a Hall current across the gate lines. In this case, you have your constant current lines across the gate. Okay, so it's similar in where the current is going between the etch line system and the surface acoustic wave system. What are the possibilities? Extrinsic, the effect at 1/2 could be due to simple composite fermion transport to the density modulation. Semi-classical theory of the composite fermion in a Boltzmann equation. What we'll do is I'll just show you the main result of that theoretical construction, and we'll look at the consistencies and inconsistencies. And then the other possibility is that it's intrinsic. There's some funny state occurring at 1/2. The cause or origin of it. The most frequently asked question, and I have got to get rid of that view graph. So if we look at this theory, the main role of the grating in this construction and adding terms to the Boltzmann equation is there's a magnetic field modulation. I won't go into any details of what this theory is. I think that Adi is going to add a few words at the end. Let me just show you what the main results are. The main results are that as you apply a periodic modulation to the system, you will indeed see a loss of this enhanced conductivity or the minimum at 1/2 filling factor. This is velocity shift versus filling factor. you're close enough to one half, think of it as magnetic field. You see a loss in the enhanced conductivity at one half, and you see a relative peak forming around near one half filling factor. The one thing I want to emphasize here is that you also see some resonance structure coming out. So the theory tells you that you should still have this resonance behavior or geometric resonance behavior popping up. I showed you two references there. Last week's PRL had another reference, another construction along the same lines. And in this case, you can see that as you go to smaller and smaller gate periods, the effect will become larger and larger in its width, in distinction to what we were seeing experimentally. But they also show that you should have resonance structure occurring not only in the ultrasound measurement, but also in DC transport. And again, in both of these series, the condition that's necessary in order to see any of these effects is that you have to be a sufficiently small wavelength of the gate in order to induce any of these properties. So the agreement with the experiment for the gate lines parallel to the saw propagation, you get the loss of the enhanced conductivity replaced by a peak. Again, the condition is correct. The gate wavelength has to be less than the composite fermion mean free path in order to see the effect. And also the theory tells us that it should be the formation of the peak should be relatively insensitive to the saw wavelength. Now, where's the disagreement? The disagreement is specifically at one half. The theory tells us that we should see a relative peak forming, but at one half you should still see the delta V over V dropping. We don't see that in our experiments. The other crucial disagreement is that experimentally the peak width does not change with the change in the gate wavelength. So let me just reemphasize those two points by looking at some more data. Again, the theory at one half specifically tells you that you should see it's a relative peak forming, but in this case, our peak formation at one half seems to be substantially higher than even the peak at filling factor one. It may well be that the theory is telling us that the entire background should drop, and therefore the filling factor one peak should drop as well, but it still doesn't seem to be completely consistent. The more substantial disagreement with theory is in the width effect, and we see here that over a factor of about three change in grading period, there's no substantial change in the width. Now, one thing I'll point out is this is anomalously broad. The theory tells us that we should have a width a feature that's substantially narrower than what we're measuring here. Okay, so I go into the last part. The intrinsic effect. There is no substantial theory behind that. There's nothing that tells us that we should see any sort of a quantum Hall system, in particular when we're talking about an anisotropic system. There are theories about paired states at one-half filling factor, but those don't specifically tell us anything about what should happen in an anisotropic 2D gas. The odd part about this is that, well, since we know that the width doesn't seem to work with the theory as it is there any sort of empirical piece of evidence about the width? And in fact, in all the systems all the samples that I've looked at, when we have a peak at one half filling factor, this peak maps onto the one third peak quite well. They seem to be the same width. Why that is, I don't know, and what significance that has, I don't know. Now we start with the departure between the experiment showing quantum Hall-like features. This is a capacitance measurement. I'm measuring capacitance between the top metal gate and the 2D gas. One would expect that if you really have a quantum Hall state, you should see a substantial drop in the density of states or in the capacitance measured trace at one-half filling factor. We don't see that here, and this is in a gate system that shows a very strong effect at one-half in terms of peak formation. So the old conclusions, there's substantial agreement with this Boltzmann equation approach in the conditions in order to see the effect, but there's also substantial disagreement with the Boltzmann approach, and the main point of disagreement that I think needs to be addressed is that the width of the gate, the width of the effect seems to be gate wavelength independent. Now, the rest of the properties of the system suggest that it has some relationship to a quantum Hall state. Importance of this effect width being equal to the one-third state width is very questionable. The main thing here is that the theory tells us that we should see some sort of a geometric effect. We don't see any resonance structure at all. In fact, we don't see this correspondence between the widths. If we could see a geometric resonance, it would be a very strong indication that the system really is, this extrinsic theory, if you will, really is correct. So what I did recently, actually last week, was go back and look at some, just a few more here, some etch systems. What I've done is gone to a higher density And these are light activated. The problem with using the top gates is that you can't light activate these things, and therefore you don't get as high a mobility sample, if you will. What I've shown below is a not etched, this is just looking at row XX, not etched and etched. This is the low field or zero field etched data showing you the oscillations for the electron system. And you can see that we can induce a deep relative minimum, just as in Smetsa experiments, at 1/2 filling factor. And you also see something at 3/2. So now let's go to a shallower etch. Same thing. The upper left-hand tray shows you we still have a strong modulation. In fact, in this case, it's a little bit uneven. There seems to be another harmonic in the system. Comparing to the not etched and etched, you see that now we're starting to get some structure in this minimum at 1/2. The red line marks 1/2, and the blue lines mark where you should see the principal resonance on either geometric resonance on either side of 1/2. And in fact, you see a resonance structure starting to come out here, but it's asymmetric. Now, this is a smaller wavelength. If we go to a larger wavelength, but an even shallower etch, and this is where the problem of not being able to tune comes in, you just have to do one sample at a time. In this case, you see at zero field for the etch system, no substantial oscillations. You have to look at it on end. There are actually some electron oscillations occurring there. Now we see the enhanced minimum due to the etch, and you can see the a symmetric set of resonances coming out. The red line, again, is 1/2. The blue line mark where you should see these resonance structures coming out on either side of 1/2 given this wavelength. So the resonance structures that we've seen in these two samples are in the right places given the wavelength of the modulation. They occur in the proper positions. This is just a blow up of that. It's not substantial. The theory tells us these shouldn't be really substantial effects. But I think that because they're occurring in the right places, it's giving us a strong indication that there are resonance structures. And I think that the Boltzmann approach is probably correct. So just to finish up, I think both the SAW measurements and the DC transport are generally supported by the theory. The specific finding of the geometric resonances with the gate or with the etch system is really important. I'd like to go back and try to get those out of the SAW measurements. Better data would obviously give stronger support, but I think at this point the fact that it so specifically shows you some structure at the right position in effective magnetic field is a very strong indication that the theory is correct. There still is this remaining issue of the broadening at 1/2. There's this funny broadening mechanism that was giving us a wide effects, induced peaks at 1/2, and I don't understand that. So what's the conclusion? Well, the composite fermions seem to move in semi-classical cyclotron orbits, and we knew that before, but I guess we know it better now. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to give Adi Stern about a minute to say something about the theory.
But just to very quickly tell you what the selective movement that happens with self. The way we looked at this problem, basically what Bob is telling us is that he has a modulated structure where the density is modulated, and the modulation is very weak and the effect it sees is very strong. And he sees this strong effect if he puts the electric field this way, while he doesn't see it when he puts it this way. Now this we think is pretty simple to understand. If you put the electric field this way, what the electrons want to do is mostly to move in the whole current in the F direction. Now the whole conductivity, because the whole conductivity depends on density, it is modulated. So the electrons want to have a whole current in the x direction, which depends on x. Now this of course cannot take place because of charge conservation, so they cannot carry out the whole motion they quote unquote want to do. And therefore they have to make the current go in some complicated way, which gives rise to this effect. Now what we identify that what determines the, how strong your modulation is not the ratio of the density modulation to the average modulation, delta n over n, but the parameter that comes in is delta n over n times the ratio of the whole conductivity to the longitudinal conductivity. And of course this may be very small, but since we are talking about a very strong magnetic field, this is always very large, so the product can be of order 1 even if the density modulation is only a few percent. Then what we see is that The quantity which is measured when you measure, velocity shift of surface acoustic waves or torsion or even simply DC transport, the quantity you measure is not the conductivity as you would measure in the absence of density modulation, but the conductivity plus delta n over n squared times something divided by sigma xx of the wave vector of the gradient. So you don't measure sigma yy in this direction, you don't measure the conductivity in this direction, you measure 1 over the conductivity in that direction, at the wave vector which is the grating wave vector. And as a consequence, the peak becomes the dip and vice versa, because when you have a peak at 1/2 at sigma yy, now when you measure 1 over sigma xx at 1/2, it becomes a dip. I get the hint. That's in short the story I wanted to summarize.
Thank you. Okay, questions for the main speaker?
And that's actually.
You repeat it.
Yeah, other measurements of sigma xy in the vicinity of 1/2 in these systems.
You see structure there, and in fact, you see something that looks like a plateau form.
Oh, sorry. Oh, now you tell me. You actually do see structure there. The problem is that it's very easy to have a false positive result there because of mixing of rho xx and rho xy in these gratings. So you can see you can see things sometimes that look like a nice plateau, but you also see other things that look like a wiggle. That it's actually one of the complications of working with the low density samples. It's a lot worse than the low density samples. When you go to the higher density samples, it's a little cleaner. But I'm not convinced by any of the data I've seen that you can make any statement about what's happening there as a consequence of the rho xy measurement.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any more questions, so thank you, speaker. Yeah.